Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Our topic today, a deep view into the FBI and its role in the Steele dossier and the aftermath. My guest, Colleen Rowley. She is a former FBI special agent who was with the agency for 24 years, from 1990 to 2003. She was the chief division counsel operating out of Minneapolis in Minnesota. And in May of 2002, she blew the whistle and later testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee about the FBI's pre-9/11 failures to track and investigate Massawi, who has been identified as the central person in the 9/11 plot. She stepped down from her legal position with the FBI in 2004 after her unsuccessful issuance of warnings about the dangers of invading Iraq. In 2002, she was selected by Time magazine as one of its three Persons of the Year award. Also, she represented the Democratic Farm Labor Party in an election out in Minnesota, and she was one of the group of whistleblowers, along with Ray McGovern, to travel to Moscow to present the Sam Adams Award for Integrity and Intelligence to Edward Snowden. She has a law degree from the College of Law at the University of Iowa. Her articles appear in the Huffington Post and the late Robert Perry's Consortium News. She has an anti-war blog and other commentaries, and her website is Colleen, C-O-L-E-E-N, Rowley, R-O-W-L-E-Y.com. Nice to have you with us today, Colleen.
Thanks, Gary, for having me.
Usually when people speak of the deep state, they're referring to the Pentagon and its allies in the military-industrial complex, such as the CIA, Homeland Security, the National Security Agency, and its many departments. I would say that most of the people talking about the deep state don't include the FBI or the Department of Justice. In fact, they're considered at best marginal to the deep state. And certainly there's been bureaucratic corruption within the halls of the FBI at all times. We only need to invoke the name of J. Edgar Hoover as an example, who was there for 48 years. But this scandal now seems to push the FBI as a compromised party into party politics and even the deep state, as some have suggested, such as yesterday we had Ray McGovern on. And some are saying that the FBI is in complete disarray. And can you share any thoughts or experiences you have or encountered with the FBI engaging in a larger hidden agenda over and beyond its mandate for dealing with domestic crime and counterterrorism? And keep this in mind. Every single person talking about this topic today, left or right, parses their words by saying, 99% of the people in the FBI or the Justice Department are hardworking, honest, diligent people. It's only a couple at the top, a small percentage. My review of over 60 years of FBI protocols shows that this is simply not true. This is the window dressing. This is the illusion that we would like to give. But you were there. You had a chance to see its workings from the top to the bottom and where it put its energies and whether or not this love affair that we have with law and order and the Justice Department is, and the FBI, which is a part of the Justice Department, is warranted or not. The form is yours.
Well, that sure, that introduction sure gives me a lot to talk about if I can remember everything you just brought up. But I'm going to start with your last comments first. And again, if I can remember how we started this, but I think it's both. I think that you have people at the top. I mean, J. Edgar Hoover, for his 47 years, was a perfect example. But then other directors as well also set a tone and produced a culture that if you are doing something bad at the top, it goes back to the Justice Brandeis quote, his famous quote that, you know, when government does it, it corrupts everything and it breeds chaos. So it's true that the leadership itself, because people make compromises. The ambitious people who want to be the bosses, who want to, for instance, participate in this military-industrial complex revolving door in Washington, D.C., as by the way, both Comey and Mueller and many of these figures right now are, they're all part of that. But the people like that who want to have that driving ambition, who become directors, they often have made a lot of compromises with integrity to get where they're at. I documented Mueller and Comey in a piece in Consortium back when Mueller was named in April. And it was entitled The Myth of the Russia Gates, Mueller and Comey. I might be butchering that title, but it's something like Comey and Mueller and the Russiagate myths. And I basically just scratched the surface of various scandalous things they've been involved in, at least that I know of. And again, I just picked the ones that were front page scandals. And that now, because, you know, Comey got fired and Mueller is investigating, nobody, especially the progressives and the people in the Democrat Party, really have forgotten all of these things. One of which, I mean, I'll just name a few of them. Mueller, if you go all the way back to the Whitey Bulger case, there's a lot of indication that he covered up the FBI's operating of this organized crime murderer, Whitey Bulger, that was going on for about 20 years in Boston. And in the course of that, the FBI, this is incredible stuff. I mean, all the people who are defending the FBI as being some sainted, you know, whatever, they're keeping us safe. You hear this, you know, day and night, have forgotten these things. But the FBI back in the 90s, maybe in the late 80s, 90s, because they were in prison for quite some time, framed four men for these murders that their own informant had committed, their own informants, I should say, the Whitey Bulger gang. And as a result of that, later on, like the government, taxpayers had to pay over $100 million. It took years and years and years for this to come out. But when it did, the government had to pay $110 million to these four men, two of whom had died in prison, so it was to their estates. Mueller and Comey were both involved in going after, you know, we don't know about Carter Page. There's a lot of ifs. There's a lot of unknowns. But before there was a Carter Page, if in fact he is innocent of everything, there was Stephen Hatfield, who both Mueller and Comey targeted as the anthrax killer. And he later, it took again a few years for this to finally be proven, but he won $6 million in government tax money. Again, I am just scratching the surface. Mueller, after 9/11, was in charge of the post 9/11, what was called the post 9/11 roundup of immigrants who were simply standing in the wrong place at the wrong time in New York City. About 1,000 men were put into jail, some of them for between 9 months and a year. None of them were guilty of terrorism. If you think about this, and somebody's saying, well, you know, everybody makes mistakes. And let's say you rounded up 1,000 people and, you know, 800 were guilty and 200 were innocent. People would say, yeah, but that's not right. You know, you should have been much more accurate than that. In this case, 0% was accurate. And Mueller let it go on. He knew about it. He let it go on. Both Mueller and Comey signed off on. Mueller didn't have to sign off. He just looked the other way. But Comey actually signed off on torture tactics. They signed off on, of course, they knew about the warrantless monitoring that Snowden later disclosed. I mean, again, scratching the surface, their history is quite incredible if you know about them. And, of course, they were the directors in the long line, the long succession after J. Edgar Hoover. So when you have people like that at the top setting the tone in the culture, pretty much everyone will go with the flow. And it will, you know, by and large, do a lot of damage to even the good people working. There's not a whole lot they can do. They, you know, become a whistleblower if they know something real serious, you know, like I did, but that kind of ends your career. Okay, so that's one thing, but also there are rogue. There are rogue even at the lower levels of in the FBI. Now, they aren't, you know, again, I would very much agree with you that 90-some percent of good people with integrity and good agents. But Robert Hansen, who became the Russian spy, you know, he was kind of a mid-management. He wasn't a low level. But in 1994, we even had a first office agent. That's the lowest ranking new agent. And he had a sex affair with his informant, got her pregnant, and then murdered her and put her in his trunk and drove her body around for 3 days. There was a lot of that kind of thing. Again, it's kind of hard. I can't quantify it and say, you know, what the percentage is. But these rogue people who do wrongful things do lead to internal affairs investigations in the FBI. Now, of course, J. Edgar Hoover's, going all the way back to J. Edgar Hoover's idea, was that the FBI would only investigate itself. There wouldn't be an inspector general or someone outside the agency to do these investigations of wrongful actions. And in the course, J. Edgar Hoover thought that way only we know about it. And his rule was then never embarrass the bureau, never embarrass the BU. And the public would never know about some of these really sordid episodes because they would all, yeah, they would oftentimes get fired and more times than not actually be asked to retire or asked to resign. So sometimes if you see a former FBI agent who only worked for 5 or 10 years, you'll never know why they left. But in fact, if they did some pretty serious thing, they would be asked to resign. That actually kept it all secret. The public doesn't know any of those episodes. And the bottom line is it's on both levels. It's at high levels, and it's also the, you know, people at the bottom also get caught up in things and do bad, wrongful things. The endemic feature that allows for most of this is secrecy. If you take secrecy out of any institution, you will automatically put people on their best behavior. And unfortunately, the FBI, like the CIA, the NSA, is in this secret mode. And especially in national security matters, it's in the secret mode. I was just writing to our veteran intelligence professionals for Sanity earlier today, and I was trying to tell them the comparison between a normal search warrant or even a normal electronic surveillance warrant in the criminal arena is very different than the FISA. And here's the difference. In the criminal case, I was involved in writing and drafting and monitoring a lot of organized crime figures in New York City in the 1980s. All of that monitoring, just as the FISA one was on Carter Page, very similar, all of that monitoring that we did of these Italian organized crime figures in these four families was done with very long affidavits. Some of them were 100 pages, you know, or even more. They usually were the product of a year or even 2 years of investigation. So after 2 years of investigating, you finally were able to write up an affidavit with, like I said, 100 pages detailing everything. A district judge would review it and sign it, and then you would begin monitoring for 30 days, by the way, not 90, only 30 in the criminal. And here's the difference. At the end of that surveillance, what happens normally is the entire affidavit or affidavits, if it was extended, get handed to a defense attorney or to defense attorneys. And so after we had been listening in to these mobsters in New York in the 80s, the very next thing that happens is all of the copies of all of this, these hundreds of pages of affidavits, and then those defense attorneys pore over them with their clients looking for any little mistake or omission in those affidavits. Then they litigate that in front of, usually it's in front of magistrate judges in pretrial motions. And so there's a check, there's a really strong check in the criminal system on anything that, you know, again, what's being alleged in the FISA system, where there is no check on it, because it's not only covered by temporary secrecy, but essentially it's covered by what is called perpetual secrecy. So anybody who's writing an affidavit is not really going to have any incentive to be careful, because it's never going to be reviewed. And it's only in this, of course, this recent case of Carter Page, where this is unprecedented that it's that something has ever come out. The rest of those affidavits, and frankly, they're not called affidavits; they're called declarations in the FISA system. There are thousands of those. They skyrocketed after 9/11, mostly due to the war on terrorism. The numbers of FISAs doubled within a few years. The criminal, what they call Title III electronics, those remain the same. There's about 500 a year, and that line just is a flat line. You could go back 20 years, and it didn't go up at all. It just was about 500 on the criminal side. But on the FISA side, after 9/11, they just skyrocketed. And again, there's no incentive or even there's no built-in way for any kind of accountability. And in a system like that, even good people will become much more careless. And I would say even in some cases reckless, especially when they got the pressure of the war on terrorism, et cetera. So we've built a system now, this FISA system, which is fraught. It is just inherently fraught with potential abuse, even from the start. There were law professors who wrote about this, and especially after 9/11, they wrote, you know, that, you know, we had to find a way to insert accountability and some transparency. I shouldn't say transparency isn't the right term, but reducing the secrecy. I had one law professor I tried to help and promote the idea, even with the FBI, and basically there would be a way that instead of saying that everything you'd go in front of the FISA court for national security purposes, which you're told and everyone believes is perpetually secret, that it will never come out, all that you had to do, the tweak to that would be that the FISA judge, when he agrees, and by the way, the FISA court is about 99% rubber stamp. They agree every time an application is put with them, with exception of very few. And so, but when they agree, they would look at the type of case, and let's say it was a lone wolf terrorist, or maybe a group of two or three terrorists. Why should that then be cloaked with perpetual secrecy? Maybe if you were talking about, you know, a foreign country, superpower, something, the secrecy would be different. But with a small group of terrorists, it could actually be a shorter time. The judge would say, oh, I give you 2 years. You can continue to investigate this small group. And after 2 years, then you can come back to me and ask for an extension on the secrecy. That alone, if it would be reducing the secrecy that way, would inject a lot more care into the entire process. But like I said, this law professor, who himself had been a government attorney, he didn't get anywhere with that idea. And of course, it's basically just a system that's out of control right now. The FBI, I remember the earlier part of your introduction here, which is that the FBI was never considered to be, as bad as the CIA. And the reason for that was because the FBI has always had to operate under the Constitution because of American citizens. Most of their work is either in the criminal side, which, you know, the First, Fourth, Fifth, Sixth Amendments all apply to American citizens. The CIA's work, of course, is on foreign people, and foreign people do not enjoy any of the civil rights of citizens. And so they're told right from the start, don't worry about any of the laws, the country, let's say the foreign country's laws that they're operating in. This no CIA person has to worry about the foreign country's laws that they are operating in. And really, I don't think they even care much at all about international law. For instance, the prohibition against torture is a good example. If they think they won't get caught, then even the international law, they don't really care about. And so that's why the CIA has, I think, a reputation of being the deep state because it's even more secret and they don't have to worry about the Constitution. The FBI, at least part of their work, or the great part, the greatest majority of their work, was always under the Constitution. The one part, national security and counterintelligence, was in this, again, this secret FISA system, which is kind of in the middle. There is a law, but it's, again, because it's cloaked in perpetual secrecy, it's not quite the same as the criminal process. And it's not nearly as accountable, etc.
Okay, we want to go on to some other topics. My research has shown that, and this is according to USA Today, that based upon the Freedom of Information Act documents, in just one recent year, they identified 5,600 crimes that the FBI gave a green light for its informants to commit. That means the FBI was abating these informants and committing a crime. Now, you mentioned Bulger up in Boston. He ran the Murder Incorporated up in Boston. He killed personally and his henchmen over 21 people minimally. Some have that figure much higher, and they knew it. He was being supported with information, intel, and covering up by the FBI in that office, and then nationally they wanted to cover it up because they were being embarrassed by it. But that went on for decades. Also, they tried to force Martin Luther King to commit suicide. They were framing innocent two-bit crooks for murder cases where no person could be found guilty. That they had, and the famous case of the Joseph the Animal Barboza being one of them. They were spying on the Supreme Court illegally, wiretapping court conference rooms. They blackmailed people with a no-fly list. This list has been used by the FBI to identify innocent people to blackmail and turn into informants. And then also the FBI had a role in Operation Northwoods, the plan to stage a false flag terrorist attack in Florida and blame it on Cuba in the early 1960s. There's also been rampant spying on innocent African-American families, and when the Black Power Movement was underway, virtually every single Power Movement group and the Black Panthers in that group had undercover informants reporting to the FBI. They also set the wounded knee Native American activist Pelletier. He was not guilty, and the FBI is now a mainstay of counterterrorism. So, to me, those are scandalous, because now the CIA has been operating in the United States against its citizens, against its charter, and the FBI is now working also in the same territory internationally as the CIA. So, they're both crossing over. Also, what's interesting and bizarre, this is just absolutely beyond the pale. The FBI has hatched terrorist plots, and these were facilitated by FBI undercover agents who provided the dummy missiles and fake explosive and faulty suicide vests and even elementary training in order to get people to become terrorists, then only to arrest them at the last moment. This is, you could read all this in the Terror Factory. And the FBI manufactured the war on terrorism was written in 2013. That's a good read. And before 2012, 14 of the 22 most frightening plans for terrorist attacks in the United States since 9/11 were created by FBI agents, including a planned attack on fuel lines at JFK Airport, to destroy the Sears Tower in Chicago, a suicide bombing in Tampa Bay, planting bombs on the New York and Washington subways. A would-be suicide bomber caught on the way to the Capitol was nurtured by agents to undertake an act he normally would not have done, despite some of his fundamentalist Muslim learnings. It also, separately, that was set up a low-level drug dealer with minor criminal record with a Stinger missile to target Jews, only because of evidence he posted hate rants against them. Schemes to bomb synagogues and shoot Tanger missiles at military aircraft by men in Newburgh, New York. Fly an explosive model plane into the Pentagon in the Capitol by men in Massachusetts. In Portland, Oregon, Muslim college student was provided by the FBI agent with six 55-gallon drums of inert material and harmless, and but was told that it would be make a major explosion, and that was supposed to be at a Christmas tree lighting ceremony. And the agent actually, FBI agent actually did the driving. So they have a long history of setting up these supposed terrorists who were not terrorists, but they got them into these situations where they encouraged them, trained them, and then made the arrest. And all the public knows this. Thank goodness the FBI is there. They stopped another terrorist attack. Yeah, 98% of these terrorist attacks, they created, these were setups, and then they arrest the people and take the credit. It's like for decades, the FBI had this stellar record of solving crime, and the majority of those arrests were for recovering stolen cars. So also setting up alleged drug dealers to sell drugs to agents, and usually those were African Americans. And they did the same thing with alleged arms traffickers to sell weapons, then arrest them. So we're never told about this. We're never given this information. We're just given this idea that they are heroes. Now, when you look at the six media, and let's pull back a moment here, Colleen, to look at what they are supporting and who supports them. I did a review of 13,000 media, including but not limited to 1,500 newspapers, 1,100 magazines, 9,000 radio stations, 1,500 television stations, 2,400 publishers. All of these are controlled by just six corporations. They are all pro-Justice Department, the Clintons, except for one, and they all support the FBI, including General Electric. They own Comcast, NBC, Universal Pictures, and Focus Features, Disney, that owns ABC, ESPN, Pixar, Miramax, Marvel Studios, Viacom owns MTV, Nickelodeon, Set, CMT, and Paramount Pictures, Time Warner, that owns CNN, HBO, Time, and Warner Brothers, CBS, that owns Showtime, Smithsonian Channel, NFL, Jeopardy, and 60 Minutes. Now, mind you, I've met Don Hewlett, who was the executive producer of 60 Minutes. Two of my investigations ended up in national television as specials. One, Judy Moses, the executive producer of 2020, with a piece I had written on Stanislaw Brzezinski, the first and only piece at that time written on this doctor. I'd done 2 years of research. He was being harassed. I got him out of his harassment by the county medical board and the state medical board. They were on fishing expeditions, which they had no right by their own charter to do. He had natural and alternative cancer therapies, and he was a legitimate MD, PhD cancer researcher, but they didn't like him. And so I wrote an article, and then I was called by Judy Moses, and they produced that with Geraldo Rivera on 2020 and won two Emmys. Then I got a call from a producer at 60 Minutes. I met with Don Hewlett, and they did a piece of mine that I'd written about Dr. Friedman, and Lawrence Burton at the Freeport Grand Bahamas Clinic on natural treatments for cancer using your body's own immune system. That was a big hit. In the process of speaking to people at CBS, including a person who would later write a book called Charlie Wilson's War, it was produced with Julie Roberts and Tom Hanks, recently as a major motion picture. And the person who did that was a man named Kryl. And I'm close friends with his sister, who is a well-known American artist and a professor of art at a university. And he told me, he said, if there's any story that comes through that is going to put the administration, the liberals or Democrats, like the Clintons, in a bad light, we're not going to handle that. And that was proof when they had all the evidence they needed on Bill Clinton and his lying about his many affairs. And they had him on after New Hampshire, and that caused him to make a big bounce back in the polls and saved his career, quite literally. So I've seen firsthand how these television stations, the big ones, because I've been on all of them, or my work has, they'll use something to their advantage. Now, then you look at the one exception, that's News Corp, and they own Fox, Wall Street Journal, and New York Post, and they are probably the single most powerful voice for the, not conservatives, but rather for the hard right Republican and business interest. And they go right down the line. So now, where is the room in all this media, six corporations? But remember, if you had 9,000, 1,500, you're 10-5, 11-5, 12 when you had the TV stations, 13-6 when you had the magazines, 14-15-6, 16,000 media outlets. So 95% of all Americans are getting their information about a person, a corporation, a business, or a governmental agency from these, and they're very biased. And the so-called liberal community that's supposed to protect us against these police state actions and weaponizing different groups and polarizing impact, they're doing nothing except protecting them. And then you start to pull back another curtain. So now we know the media are the voices. There are the think tanks. And if you ever watch on any of them, the people come on and they're always pedigreed from coming from an institution or a foundation or a think tank, like the Council on Foreign Relations, or the Heritage Foundation, or the Free Enterprise Institute, or the Business Roundtable. But those are all highly ideological bastions, and they all have their agenda. These are the neocons. These are the neoliberals. They want new world order, one world government. They want to control your life. And look at where we are today, and look at how many people are involved in monitoring our actions, including the FBI. They infiltrated every one of the occupation Wall Street groups in America, no matter how harmless or passive, it didn't matter. They have their agents or their contacts are in all the environmental groups, all the peace groups. So now, here's what you have. On the one side, you have people who believe in democracy and freedoms. And on the other hand, you have this oligarchical elite. You have 5,000 members. The most powerful people in the world are the 5,000 members of the Council on Foreign Relations. And they're everywhere. The Clintons were a part of them. The Bushes were a part of them. The Obamas, a part of them. The same with the Bilderbergs. So now you can have an honest FBI agent, an honest CIA agent, and there are those. But what power do they have unless, as you said, become a whistleblower? Because they are going to get chewed up and spit out. Obama sent more whistleblowers to jail and brought more under the Espionage Act of 1917 than any and all other presidents in history. And yet the left loved him. And now look at my final thing, and then I'll give you all the time you need to address this. Look at the Clintons. Look at the war on drugs. They support the war on drugs. Irony of ironies, three presidents in a row, Bill Clinton was a big drug user, and then George Bush talked about drugs, and Obama. And yet they put people in prison for what they did. Now, they had a chance to write a book and become president, become filthy rich. And yet, having a small amount of marijuana, you could be in jail for 7 years and your life destroyed. So every opportunity that these three separate administrations, totaling 24 years, a whole generation of people's life, were pro-war on drugs. So I just got some statistics today by doing some research, and the highest homicide rates in the world are in San Salvador. We caused that. Honduras, we caused that. Nicaragua, we caused that. In Guatemala. In Mexico, the Mexican government released data showing that in just 7 years, this was under Obama and Hillary Clinton, over 196,000 killed in drug wars, 75,000 missing and presumed dead. That's 250,000 people. In fact, there was 27,000 just 1 year alone. And it's estimated that the Mexican drug cartels rake in about up to $30 billion annually in drug sales, and no effort whatsoever to see how stupid a war on drug is. In Colombia, there's the Clintons. Colombia's drug war conflicts with going for almost 52 years now, before it was even the mainstream media. approximately 220,000 killed, almost 3,000 assassination of Union leaders, 6 million Colombians displaced, 45,000 disappeared and presumed dead, 489,000 women raped in Colombia, and deaths still occurring from about 10,000 so far from landmines that were used in the war on drugs in Honduras. UK called the most dangerous country in the planet is Honduras. And in 2016, it had the highest homicide rate per capita in the world, 91 per 100,000 people. That's roughly 84,000 human beings killed because of drugs there and some of the world's most vicious gangs. In fact, over 100,000 women and kids fled Honduras because of that violence. And we precipitated the conditions on the ground that led to this. And now Trump is rounding them up and sending them back. And also, it's home to many U.S. operations. It was the site of U.S. cocaine kitchens during the Iran-Contra period. San Salvador, run over by vicious gangs similar to Honduras. In fact, it was the murder capital of the world. It had overtaken Honduras just 2 years ago. And all these gangs are involved in drug trade. And yet, you would think that Hillary Clinton would say, isn't it time that we stop the war on drugs, created centers to help people get off of them and transition back into a healthy life, and open these centers up in every community in America, which would have put a lot of therapists to work and also help people regain their lives. Instead, they doubled down, you know, and it was because of her and her husband. So when these people are protecting, when the liberals, all the liberals are protecting the Clintons and all those media I just mentioned, five of the six major media corporations representing well over 14,000 media publications are all supporting Hillary Clinton, Wall Street supporting Hillary Clinton, Big Pharma supporting Hillary Clinton, Big Energy supporting Hillary Clinton, the entirety of the medical and military-industrial spy complex all supporting Hillary. Why? Why? Because of what her and her husband's policies have been and what it means for them not to be interfered in making money anywhere in the world with the neocon agenda. And no one is talking about this. This is what's really behind this whole mess. That's my opinion. Now take your time and put these pieces together.
Well, I think you've done a great job of putting it all together. For the most part, I wasn't 100% sure of all the things you listed that the FBI in its long sordid, you know, history has been involved in. But I posted an article entitled "The FBI is Not Your Friend" on Facebook a couple of days ago. And it actually, you know, listed quite a few of those same things that you went through. And I only posted it because of people having forgotten. These were things that, you know, somebody that's 60s, in their 50s or 60s, should have remembered. They were adults when these things happened. They were big news articles. And they should remember, you know, the Whitey Bulger case and all these things. And yet, you know, the people are so easily manipulated. And you absolutely are right when six main entities own the media and a reporter or a news writer, you know, they can have a choice to post, to write a blog or to write something online. But if they want to be in work for the New York Times or the Washington Post and become a big name, they curry favor with sources on the inside. They curry favor not usually with low level people, but with the Haydens and the Brennans and the like you said, the Council on Foreign Relations, people who are revolving doors. I was just going to add that one thing to your description. These think tanks in the big national think tanks all are revolving doors between State Department, where you go out as an ambassador for a year or two, depending upon your party, you know, what donating money, etc. And now you come back in a think tank, or you were like Scooter Libby. You know, you were neoconservatives working for the Bush administration, but when that's over, now you go into a think tank. Comey, for instance, the former FBI director, was pulling down over $1 million as a vice president, general counsel of Lockheed Martin, you know, a war profiteer, before he became FBI director. Ray was similar. The current FBI director, he was pulling down $7 million at some law firm. A lot of the big law firms are the same thing. They're working for special interests. And so it's a big revolving door. And, you know, for lack of a better term, deep state, you know, you think of CIA and stuff, but the better term might be the establishment, because the media, you know, military, industrial, congressional, media, think tank, you know, you can throw a few more things in there, are all have really a very strong consensus. And that strong consensus does not at all line up with the American public's interests. You know, go back to your entrapment, your comments about entrapment. I don't know if all of the cases, the, you know, hundreds, maybe even close to 1,000 cases now of terrorists being arrested, where the FBI has really pushed, if they put an undercover agent or an informant who is good at using psychological skills on people to push them into things, to, in some cases, just subtly coerce them, it's not known what percentage of these people would have or would not have carried out an action. Now, it may be that some of them would, if they had been left alone, might have eventually carried out some action. No one knows that. But what is known, and this has been documented in more than one book, is that there was a lot of pushing and coercing by really trained undercovers and informants that were given a lot of monetary incentives to get people to do things. Of course, the FBI was doing this because they had to show, this is actually why the post 9/11 roundup occurred, they had to show that they were working after 9/11, the budgets for all of the intelligence agencies just went through the roof. They all went, you know, sky high. Well, they have to show that they're trying to prevent terrorism. What better way to show these statistics? And so, yeah, but anyways, going back to the revolving door and this establishment that has a strong interest in lulling and manipulating the American people, making people forget what happened even 10, 15, 20 years ago by the same people. I mean, good example is George Bush. If you went back during the 8 years, and especially at the end of the 8-year term of George Bush, when the Iraq War was not going well, you wouldn't find any or very few Democrats that would have said anything good about George Bush. Now with the media and all of this strong propaganda effort, and now he's invited on, he's up in podiums, and everybody's, same with Condi Rice, by the way. Condi Rice was invited to give a speech on Civil Rights Day, the anniversary of signing of the Civil Rights a couple of years ago here. And everyone, liberals, everyone is clapping for her. Such a beautiful black woman. She really cares about civil rights. She was paid $200,000 to give a half an hour speech. But this ability to manipulate the public, and even people who understood and maybe recalled that Condi Rice wasn't such a good, had not done such good things when she was in these official positions under George Bush. I had to write an article. Condi Rice is the one who gave the order to torture folks. Don't you even remember that? She's the one who told the CIA to start torturing. And yet they were holding her up as a civil rights icon. And I think the history is her family moved away from Martin Luther King Jr. because they didn't want to be connected to it. And yet all of our top elite neoliberals in the Twin Cities were in the audience clapping crazy for Condi Rice. Same thing now is happening with George Bush. He's being rehabilitated completely, so most of the Democrats and the liberals think, oh, well, he didn't do so bad. Iraq is a better place now after all. So you're right. It's amazing how the media can, you know, I would say, for lack of a better term, when it's a 24/7 thing and you really don't get any difference between channels, there's nothing to pick from, unfortunately, a large number of people fall into it. This is just a very much a side note here, but one of the authors of the book about the FBI's entrapment cases was Trevor Aronson. I don't remember the name of his book, but it was a good book documenting a lot of this entrapment. He now is a writer for The Intercept, and guess what? One of his most recent articles was lauding and or defending the FBI. I mean, he wrote an entire book documenting instances which were pushing and coercing people to commit crimes by the FBI. And now, you know, a little change of the partisan thing changes, and now he's defending and lauding the FBI in his latest Intercept article. So that's just a good example of how this works. And it's really a depressing thing to witness. Let me just see here. I wrote a couple notes down. I'll just mention that propaganda like this, where it's really constantly pushing people's emotional buttons in order to for a desired result. It's kind of the old Edward Bernays. If you press people's emotional fear, hate, greed, false pride, and blind loyalty, you can kind of own those people. People are, most people, not everyone, but a lot of people are very, very vulnerable to their emotional buttons being pressed. And so when facts come out later on, usually at the time that you get these kind of hysterical reactions, you know, after 9/11, everybody was made to believe that Iraq was behind 9/11. The polls showed that 70% of the American public fell for that Cheney Bush lie that Iraq and Saddam was behind 9/11. And it's incredible to think about that, but that's just another example of how easy it is to manipulate. Now, when facts eventually come out, and a lot of times you mentioned a few examples, but a lot of this war on terrorism and war on drugs is inherently based on hypocrisy. So if you say that you're fighting terrorism, most Americans would believe that the goal is to reduce terrorism, right? I mean, if you're fighting terrorism, of course, you want to beat it. You want to reduce terrorism. And in fact, you find out these cases where the United States has actually been funding. And Charlie Wilson's war is a perfect example, one of the best known examples, because we do have a book and we have a movie, but we have proxy forces in countries, sometimes dissident forces, but sometimes also even terrorist groups, where the United States has gone in there and armed them, as they did in Charlie Wilson's war. And then years later, when facts come out, and it turns out that these terrorist groups are behind attacking the United States, of course, the hypocrisy has to kick in. And you see this with Saudi Arabia also to a certain extent, you know, because everybody covered up the fact that Saudi Arabia was really one of the countries that was funding the hijackers and the Al-Qaeda as a whole, this fundamentalist Wahhabi version, I would say perverted version of that Saudi Arabia ascribes to. And so that all had to be covered up because, you know, we want to maintain them as our top ally. So this hypocrisy is just endemic. And to the extent that almost no, with the exception of Robert Perry, the late Robert Perry, and, you know, I have a couple others that I kind of have up on, still have trust in. For the most part, I have trust in a few, just a very, very few writers, and most of them are not mainstream. Because right now, the mainstream is just they've got to sell this, and they've got to sell the war profiteering to a great extent. If the war on drugs increases drugs, by the way, there's been a study, an academic study, that show that the war on drugs actually did increase the amount of drugs reaching the United States. It actually served to increase. And, you know, it was counterintuitive and maybe to some people, but it actually had that result. But you know what? That academic story, it did not make front page news on New York Times, Washington Post. You know, it basically gets buried. And, you know, this is the sad thing. We have to find ways of educating more people. I applaud you for doing, trying to do this and getting on, you know, voices like myself who are more critical thinking rather than partisan. I just thought of one more point I want to mention about the leaking. Do we have time?
Yes.
Because leaking, you know, whistleblowing and leaking are not exactly the same. Leaking from high levels, and especially to your favorite reporters, the ones who are the, you know, get the front page on New York Times, Isikoff, you know, it comes to mind because he's even listed in this Nunes memo as having written a story based on Steele. But Isikoff and Ignatius, and of course, back during the Iraq, ginning up the Iraq war, it was Judith Miller and Michael Gordon. These are the people that the powerful bosses in the deep state and also in Congress and in different executive branches use as their conduits. And they leak to them. And, of course, the biggest hypocrisy is that if anybody tells the truth, a whistleblower like Edward Snowden or John Kiriakou or the whole list, you know, all the people that they, Tom Drake, all the people that they've prosecuted, if somebody tells the truth just out of conscience, then they prosecute that person as if it's terrible. But the leaking stuff is really how this information is being controlled and being used to manipulate the American people. Partisanship, divide and conquer is also a huge component. The United States uses this in foreign countries. You know, we got North Korea and South Korea divided so that they can fight each other. We did it with
okay,
the
Colleen,
Shias. Okay,
Colleen, we don't have time except for one last question. How does the impact of the Clinton campaign and their friends with Fusion GPS that created this, that caused the creation of this and funded the dossier. Can you tell us anything about its relationship with the Democratic National Committee, which was fully behind Hillary Clinton during the election campaign?
Well, the DNC and the Clinton campaign did not hire Steele directly. You know, nobody... They're always trying to keep what they call keep our fingerprints off because of implausible deniability. There are certain tactics of powerful players. And so in the case of the DNC and the Clinton campaign, they hire a law firm. The law firm hires Fusion GPS, and then the Fusion GPS hires Chris Steele, the British spy who then compiles this you know, spurious dossier or salacious dossier that no one knows how much, if any of it, was ever confirmed or even verified. And we're waiting to see now with these memos coming out that maybe we'll find that out. But right now, we don't know. It appears that very little of it was verified, but we really don't know. And so, yeah, they were doing it to basically this kind of propaganda campaign. In a campaign, opposition research is always done. And yes, then it's put out in the public and you're trying to get votes by telling people this and this and this. It's funny because the Clinton campaign accuses the Trump campaign of collusion with Russia, but in fact, it was Steele's collusion with high-level Russian officials. And it's not even being denied that this is where he got his information from. He says, at least, maybe he got it from hearsay. We don't know where he got the information in his dossier. He says he came, maybe it was secondhand or thirdhand from high-level officials. But the funny thing is you got the whole country thinking that Trump colluded with Russia, and in fact, it's really not denied that the person that the Clinton campaign hired was the person colluding with the Russians. I mean, it's incredible. It's Orwell. We're believing the exact opposite of the truth these days.
Colleen, when we look at this in time, and it'll take another 2 to 3 months for all the different documents to come out, including the originating documents.
We hope. I believe those may never, by the way, those may never come out.
Well, I believe that at some point they will, because I believe that there are going to be people within the Justice Department and the FBI who are going to be investigated And in that investigation, if it's shown that they lied with the information to get the FISA court, that's a federal crime. And for that, in this environment today, they will not be forgiven, no matter how powerful they are. And once they start to fall, I believe that we'll see the truth of how strong the association of the Clinton group and the major media are in protecting them, even though they conspired to rig an election. You can hate or dislike or be dismissive of Donald Trump, that's fine. But we shouldn't have people breaking the law in order to have their candidate elected. And that is what a lot of people are opposed to. I thank you for all your good work, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Yeah, and I certainly hope you're right that the truth comes out. I hope this Inspector General is a man of integrity and starts the ball rolling. I'm not quite as optimistic as you are because I've seen too many cover-ups.
We'll see. We'll see shortly, and we'll invite you back if we have evidence that there was a cover-up. Colleen, C-O-L-E-E-N, Rawley, R-O-W-L-E-Y.com is her website. Thank you for being on. And yep, I want to thank all you for listening, and I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.
Hey, what's up now? Brother, what's up? This is a big party, man. Yeah, I can dig it. Stop right on.
Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer. For only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and get here today. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality.